Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. Hotter than 10 hells out in Southern California, huh? Well, better you folks than us here in the buckle of the Bible Belt. Oh my God, what a bizarre summer. We only have about 18 days left of summer, and then it's over, right? Busy political weekend. First, Larry, not even a tad gay, Craig pled guilty to soliciting something in he says it was, he was just waving his hand. What was it? He wasn't soliciting sex. He was creating a public who cares? Anyway, he scheduled the news conference, announced his resignation. Today he says he's taking it back. Talk about your flip-flops. Can this guy make up his mind about anything? Gay, straight, guilty, innocent, staying, leaving, coming, going, upside down, right side up. Oh, well. And Chuckle Nuts took a break from all his hard work vacationing at Crawford. He once again used soldiers, this time soldiers in a combat zone, as backdrop for a photo op. Jesus. So because of that, we'll have some disgusting moron sounds from that nightmare for you tonight. And then there's a new book about the decider called Dead Certain by Robert Draper. After reading a synopsis, it looks like Bush and I actually share one thing in common after all. His presidency does make both of us, him and me, cry. So we have lots to talk about tonight. John McCain got into a testy exchange with a high school student in Concord, New Hampshire today. A student at Concord High, where Bush was speaking, rose to ask McCain a question about gay rights, and ultimately dissatisfied by the answer he received from McCain, he told the Republican presidential contender that he'd come looking to see a leader, and didn't. The student asked, first of all, about McCain's support for the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the military's policy regarding gays, and about his belief in the sanctity of marriage. McCain said discrimination in any form is unacceptable in America today. Oh, really, John? Okay. He said, I understand the controversy that continues to swirl around this issue, you know, gay rights, marriage. He says that debate needs to be continued. The kid pressed on, do you support civil unions or gay marriage? McCain answered, I do not. I think that they impinge on the status and the sanctity of marriage between a man and a woman. Back to that, huh? So the kid said, do you believe in taking away someone's rights because you believe it's wrong? McCain said, I wouldn't put that interpretation on my position, but I understand yours. And then this high school student went on to ask another question about how to help the working class in America. McCain dodged that one about talking about the country's need to figure out education and health care and to secure the environment. Oh, really? Okay, John, is that what you need to do? Let's see. Got to figure out education, then I'm going to figure out health care, and then I'm going to figure out how to secure the environment. Okay. At that point, the high school student said he wanted to follow up again. McCain said, you have one more? Go ahead. You're doing good. The student said, I came here to see a leader, and I don't. The assembled students murmured, and a teacher started to step in. Yeah, boy, sit down. Rouse me, do. Get out of the stadium! Out! McCain stepped in and said, I understand. I thank you. That's what America is all about. But the teacher was right there, ready to do it, right? Huh? Das ist verboten! Nein! Meanwhile, over the week, yesterday and today, if you heard a lot of noise in the sky, maybe you heard the 12 Russian strategic bombers that took part in an Arctic exercise yesterday and today, including tactical launches of cruise missiles. Whew. That's according to an Air Force spokesman, a Russian Air Force spokesman. He didn't specify where the exercises took place. I'm sure our crack North American Air Defense Command knows where. But he did say the bombers took off from five air bases stretching from the Volga River city of Engels to someplace on the Chukotka Peninsula overlooking the United States. That's all we need to know there. The peninsula overlooks the United States. The Russian Air Force spokesman said the planes also practiced mid-air refueling. So you realize what's going on here, right? Last month, Putin ordered Russia's Air Force to resume long-range patrols by the strategic bombers. Of course, that had been abandoned since the end of the so-called Cold War, right? Huh? But with a freakoid madman in the White House, I guess Putin, who is also insane, decided, well, I guess I need to get crazy like Bush. He said this is in line with his policy, his assertive foreign policy, and his efforts to build up the Russian armed forces. Putin said the resumption of patrols like these is needed to, quote, guarantee national security, end quote. Jesus, God. Now, remember the Russian expedition to the North Pole last month, where the Russians said, well, the North Pole and the Arctic region is nothing more than an extension of a shelf that extends from Russia underneath the Arctic Ocean all the way to, I don't know, Japan. So it's all theirs, right? So based on that, Jack wrote to me and says, Mike, there isn't a day that goes by that we don't hear something that was caused by this malevolent administration, the Bush administration. The story about the Russian bombers is serious stuff. The Russians probably feel as though they, too, must show some strength. This is crazy. These bastards, Jack writes. Peace is not a word in their vocabulary. Yeah, just when you thought the Cold War was over, along comes Bush, along comes Putin. Perfect combination, huh? How many times in the past week, 10 days, have you heard about the Hillary Clinton campaign finance scandal? How many times have you heard about it? This character named Norman Sue, according to reports in the LA Times, Mr. Sue skipped out on a 1991 plea agreement in San Mateo County, California, in which he was supposed to serve 3 years for grand theft. And apparently the crack U.S. Marshal Service have not been able to find him for the past 16 years. So what's he been doing in 16 years? Well, he became a top Democratic fundraiser and contributor to campaigns, including Hillary Clinton's, as well as other Democratic campaigns, including Barack Obama, just on and on. But the U.S., why did they put Dog the Bounty Hunter on this guy? So Dog the Bounty Hunter could stand around and pose and talk into his wrist. But here they couldn't catch it. Nobody knew where this guy was until he said, here I am. But how many times have you heard this story? Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton. Norman Sue, Norman Sue, Norman Sue. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Money, 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 money. The Clinton campaign has agreed to return $23,000 in campaign donations. And Obama has agreed to donate his $2,300 to charity. Now, how many times, it's just a rhetorical question, how many times you hear about that story? 10, 50, 100? What about Alan B. Fabian? Did you hear anything about him? Huh? On mainstream media. Do you know who he is? Huh? Well, he was charged in a 23-count indictment, including charges of money laundering, mail fraud, perjury, obstruction of justice, and he was Mitt Romney's National Finance Committee co-chair. He's a former Bush pioneer. He ran a scheme that netted him millions of dollars, which were used to purchase beachfront property. The Romney campaign said they would return Fabian's $2,300 campaign donation, but not funds donated by others through him. Fabian stepped down from Romney's campaign shortly after his August 9th indictment. How many times have you heard about that story? I'll wait.
People want to go home. Everybody wants, you know, everybody misses their family. But you ask them whether they've accomplished the mission, the answer is yeah. And you ask them how they're feeling, they say, we're in this fight.
He sure likes to play war, doesn't he? Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. All right, Alan B. Fabian, charged in 23-count indictment, including charges of money laundering, mail fraud, perjury, obstruction of justice. And, of course, how many people, he was Mitt Romney's finance committee co-chair, how many people on the Romney campaign have been busted? Oh, my God. How many for fraud, for soliciting sex in public places, for theft, money laundering, obstruction of justice, perjury? How many? Now, that story got absolutely no coverage at all. Did you hear about it? No, of course you didn't. Of course you didn't. Unless you, unless you went to the blogosphere. Both of these scandals hold a potential for damage to both Romney and Clinton, because that's the way we think. That's the way we react. Some crooked scumsucker is out raising money, so he or she has entree to well-placed political candidates, hoping that when they get elected, the scumbag will have access. And, you know, somebody blows a whistle and finds out, we all start screaming, oh, well, Barack Obama ought to go to jail. Well, Hillary Clinton ought to be burned at the stake. Well, Mitt Romney, he's such a nice boy, isn't he, huh? Isn't he sweet? Don't you just want to go and pinch his cheek? And maybe even pinch the cheek on his face. But one of the cheeks, huh? But for unknown reasons, the liberal media gave Mitt Romney a pass. According to Media Matters, NBC, CNN, Fox News, all covered the Norman Sue Hillary Clinton scandal, but none of those networks put dedicated any time to the Romney Fabian scandal. The three networks, NBC, CNN, and Fox, did not report or discuss the Romney scandal during programs while this thing developed. But Hillary? Oh, well, that bitch! The liberal media is just weird, isn't it? Isn't the liberal media? Oh, my God. And what about this new book, Dead Certain? Huh? By Draper, what's his name? Robert Draper. Ron in Briarwood writes, everything this man has done in office, referring to Bush, has resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, from denying funds for embryonic stem cell research, refusing to distribute condoms as part of the fight against AIDS in Africa, enabling the pollution of our air and water by money-grubbing industrialists, the slaughter of innocent Iraqi and Afghan civilians, and the horrific lack of response to the Katrina tragedy on our Gulf Coast. But through it all, this monster has been, quote, dead certain, end quote. Yeah, that's, what is it in our political psychosphere that somebody who is intransigent is brittle, stands there like a jackass, will not admit to mistakes, will not admit to changing policy. Why is that considered being stalwart and manly and positive. Oh, well, you know, makes me sick. In the book, Bush says when he finally leaves office, he'll concentrate on making money. Well, he also admitted that he cries a lot on God's shoulder. Yeah, that's in the book Dead Certain. According to the New York Times, Bush told the author Robert Draper, "I got God's shoulder to cry on. I cry a lot. I've about to shed more tears than you can count as president." Oh, that's because you're a war president? Is that what we're supposed to take away? Is that the takeaway from that one, huh, George? I'll give some speeches. Just replenish your old coffers. I don't know what my dad gets. It's more than $50,000 to $75,000 a speech. And Clinton's making a lot of money, too. I'm going to get me some money. I got to have some of that money. I'm sitting around here, you know, being a war president, being a decider. Now I got to get some money. And then this filthy bastard says this regarding the Iraq war. Now remember the lies he just told the other day when he stood there with live soldiers as props, like this filthy pig always does, only this time in a war zone. He's got live soldiers behind him, some of whom are going to die. And he says to Draper in the book, "Right now I'm playing for October, November, to get us in a position in Iraq where the presidential candidates will be comfortable about sustaining a presence and stay longer. I'm playing. I'm playing for October, November." Jesus God. He's playing. Will the people, the families who have given sons and fathers and daughters and mothers into this meat grinder, into this death machine, will that statement matter to them? Or will they continue to insist that their son or daughter or husband or father or mother was murdered by George Bush for a good purpose? Yeah, I'm playing for October, November. Get us in position where presidential candidates will be comfortable about sustaining our presence there, you know, and stay longer. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander.
It's hard for me in the, you know, living in the this beautiful White House to give you an assessment, a first-hand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't.
Weren't you just there the other day? Isn't that your fourth trip or something? But you don't remember things, do you? That's another thing he told the author in the book, Dead Certain. It was never his idea to disband the Iraqi military. I have no idea. Which is such an egregious lie. Of course, Bush is a lying son of a bitch, but it's such an egregious lie that L. Paul Bremer, he of the business suits and the construction boots, released to the New York Times copies of letters that Bremer claims was his permission from Bush and Cheney and the monster, the former Secretary of Defense, whose name I just can't mention, that Bremer said he checked it all the way up. Bush said, no, that never happened. That didn't happen. It just didn't happen. God. And, of course, Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush and, All right, let's hear from the Chicken Hawk. Speaking to the troops at Al-Asad Air Base in Anbar Province in Iraq, where he once again uses live active-duty military people as a backdrop for a photo op, this time in a combat zone, in a death zone, in a killing field, but he doesn't care. Bush will do anything to avoid talking to working people on Labor Day. That's just out of the question. So much so that he snuck off to Iraq on his way to the pollute the country of Australia. Little pre-Petraeus report photo op with his favorite living backdrop, American troops. The ones he's using and tossing aside like Kleenex. Here he is!
An honor to be with you. As you know, today is Labor Day back home. So I thought I'd come by to thank you for all your hard work. Every day. Every day you show bravery under incredibly difficult circumstances. Every day.
Oh, God.
You're doing work on the sands of Anbar that is making us safer in the streets of America.
Oh, my God.
And every day, the United States of America is grateful for what you're doing. I want you to tell your families, the Commander-in-Chief stopped by to say hello, and he said, I'm incredibly proud to be the Commander-in-Chief of such a great group of men and women.
Now go kill me some Arabs. Also, tell your families that the citizens of the U.S. Want you out of this meat grinder and safely back home. Hey, tell your families, Commander-in-Chief, the Decider, that's me. That's me. You like my black shirt? Huh? Yeah. Today's Labor Day. Hoo-ah. Okay. Now here's the now infamous part where he hints at troop reduction. The Decider is such a tease. If he ever goes into a public bathroom where there is a stakeout cop, Bush is going to get busted for indecent behavior.
Every day you're successful here in Iraq draws nearer to the day when America can begin calling you and your fellow servicemen and women at home. But I want to tell you this about my decision about troop levels. Those decisions will be based on a calm assessment by our military commanders on the conditions on the ground, not a nervous reaction by Washington politicians to poll results in the media. In other words, when we begin to draw down troops from Iraq, it will be from a position of strength and success, not from a position of fear and failure. If we let our enemies back us out of Iraq, we will more likely face them in America. If we don't want to hear their footsteps back home, we have to keep them on their heels over here.
Oh, Jesus, God. This is five-year-old stuff. He's talking to people who are giving their lives for his madness. If we don't want to hear their footsteps back home. Ooh, listen, what's that sound? Footsteps. That must be the monster in the closet. Quick, get under the blankets. Ooh. Hide, hide, hide. Every day you are successful here in Iraq draws nearer to the day when America can begin calling you and your fellow servicemen and women to come home. You filthy pig, America already is and has been. It's you, Mr. Bush. That pays no attention to what America wants. Anyway, so be good little tin soldiers. And someday I'll get bored and put those of you that aren't too broken back in the box. And then I'll find a new toy to play with. I know. I'm going to go make some money. I'm going to give speeches. And Laura and I are going to open up a peace place down there in Dallas. We're going to make peace. We're going to make peace all over the world. And democracy. And freedom of stuff. Decisions will be based on a calm assessment by our military commanders, not by the nervous reaction of Wally. Who in the hell is Wally? Oh, Washington. You know, when the Decider says there's been enough carnage, that's when you can stop with the killing. Not when the people say it, not when Congress says it, not when a military commander say it, regardless of what I just told you, but when I say it. I'm a decider. I get to decide this stuff. I make decisions. I can't even begin to explain how much this man makes the bile rise up in my gut. I hate cowards. I hate hypocrites. I hate liars. ABC News' Martha Raddatz was traveling with Bush on his surprise visit. She was able to sneak in a couple of questions between photo ops. So what is his plan for troop reductions?
General Petraeus, we talked to this morning, and he said he's given you his recommendation already.
Well, I'm not going to give it to you now. I'm going to wait for General Petraeus to come and speak to the country. No question that the reinforcements or the surge has made a difference. And we're standing in a province where it's made a significant difference. And so I'm looking forward to what they have to say as to how to continue the security and at the same time enhance the reconciliation process.
Reconciliation process? Is that happening? Is that going on? He says, we're standing in a province, Al-Anbar province, where it has made a significant difference, his surge. That also happens to be the one area of Iraq that was somewhat secure before his bloody surge. So we're to believe that the only progress that resulted from the surge is, aside from the dead Iraqis and Americans, a safer Anbar province? This man is insane. This man is utterly, absolutely insane. And you got to wonder, I guess you saw the AP and the Reuters and the CNN and the ABC and the all the photos that flowed out of Iraq with Bush, you know, walking up to people and sticking his hand out. You don't see the troops sticking their hand out. They just stand there. Like, here comes the coward. Oh, Christ, here he comes. Here he comes. All right, look. Somebody say hoo-ah. Quick. But you've seen all those pictures of Bush using live occupation zone soldiers as props. And the only thing I could think of, while he's playing, that's what he said. That's his quote. While he's playing, I'm just going to play with him until September, October. And, maybe then the presidential candidate, so figure out something. You know, I just got to keep it playing, man. Got to play this thing. Damn. You got to wonder, at least I did, you don't have to do anything. But I sat there and wondered as I watched some of this video. Will it be that tall white dude standing there, all combat suited up? Will it be the short black woman standing over there? Will it be a skinny kid there with his helmet off? Who's it going to be? Which one, or two, or seven, or 10, or 20, or 30 of these soldiers that Bush did his little chicken-ass photo op with, which one, or 20, or 30 of those soldiers will be dead by the time September ends so that Bush can play? I got to play. I got to play this thing out. I'm going to play it out. See if I can just play it out till September, October, till some Democrat or somebody else gets in there and, make another commitment. I'm war president. I'm a decider. I'm commander in chief. I told them guys in uniforms the other day, hey, tell your families back home a commander in chief stopped by. That's me. How about that, huh? I'm a commander. I'm a decider. I make decisions. We'll be back after the break.
Has no chance to say goodbye. How do you walk with your head held high? Can you even look me in the eye? Let me tell you about hard work.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
You know it's hard out here for a beer. When they're trying to get their money
10 before the hour. I think one of the last times I laughed my ass off was the night that song won the Academy Award. What was that, Kathy, 2 years ago? And the writer came out and thanked Jesus for his Academy Award, for blessing him. Oh, my God. Peter in Delray Beach reminds me, at a press conference in August 2006, let me see, that'd be about a year ago, wouldn't it? Bush said, quote, "We're not leaving Iraq so long as I'm the president." That would be a huge mistake. Now, his term ends 2 years and 4 months from now, January 2009. So, and he said to the writer Robert Draper in his book Dead Certain, and Draper is Draper, just your standard run-of-the-mill right-wing neocon. Right now, I'm playing for October, November. Gets in position in Iraq where the presidential candidates will be comfortable about sustaining a presence and stay longer. That's what I'm doing. I'm gonna get out there and make some money. I'm gonna give speeches. I like giving speeches. I wanna give speeches up there, and cause you know my dad. What's my dad get? $50,000-$60,000. Damn. Is that what he gets? You know I cry on God's shoulder. I do. I cry a lot on God's shoulder. But I want to make me some money. Give them speeches like Clinton. I don't know how much. I don't know how much of that I can take today, tonight. Let's grab a call here before the break at the top of the hour. Sort of segue us out of this miserable topic and into the next hour programs. Here's AJ, the Music Factory, calling from the Catskills in the great state of New York. AJ, welcome to the program.
Hey, handsome, how you doing tonight?
If I'm doing any better, I don't know. They might arrest me for creating a public disturbance.
Well, good evening to you and the whole Malloy family. Hey, I hear you had some kind words for Mrs. Music Factory a couple of weeks ago.
I think I did. I forget in what context, but I got a nice email from her. That was very sweet.
Well, she wrote the song that is on
Sarge's
program.
That's right. The one on Sarge's program.
Yep. Look Away. That album's coming out on the 25th, by the way. So.
Yeah, well, that's great. I hope hope you guys are going to send us a free copy, of course.
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
I'm kidding.
What are you kidding for? They make great coasters and shims for your table when they... Hey, listen, this whole Senator Craig thing,
right.
Not only does it reveal to me the absolutely... The pathology that about homosexuality in this country, but it's just yet another example. The fact that he's thinking of retracting his resignation. It's yet another example of Republicans not taking responsibility. And I kid with my wife Liza that the one I blame for this whole thing is my mother. Because when I was a kid, and I used to do things, and I used to try and get away, and I would lie and squirm and cheat, she'd say to me, you know, when you get out into the real world, you can't act like this. And it turns out that this entire Republican slimy machine acts exactly like this, and I can't stand it anymore. Up is down is up, and when they do something... They say everything except I'm sorry, I did it, and I will pay the consequences. And if this particular one has an interesting spin on it, one that I have yet to see exploited, which is that he pled guilty, which means that he has committed perjury, because he then retracted that statement and said, no, I'm not guilty, I just did it to make this go away. And I'm very surprised that there's a judge in Minneapolis who hasn't said to Senator Lawrence, Craig, get your ass back here. I want to talk to you.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't get it.
I don't either. I said last week that I wish he would, when he had his press conference, I said this before he had the press conference and resigned, but I was hoping he'd just come out and give everybody the finger and and just say, you know, what I do in the privacy of my public bathroom is none of your business. Yes, I'm a hypocrite. Yes, I would do anything I can to demonize gay folk. But the fact is, you know, when did it become illegal or against the law or whatever in this country to wave your hand under the divider in a public toilet?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this whole thing is just, it's insane. His kids were on ABC's morning show, I understand, today.
Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, and they made some statement about their dad. You know, they really questioned their dad. It's insane that this even has to be an issue, that somebody who may or may not be gay, and we're talking about it as though it's someone who may or may not be a werewolf, an actual werewolf, that when there's a full moon, facial hair starts to sprout and fangs come out. I mean, this is insanity to be talking about this. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
The most ironic thing I found about it was that the Democrats, I don't necessarily mean those in the government, but just talk show hosts and people from day-to-day conversation,
right.
It's the Democrats who are his biggest defenders, who are saying, Larry, for God's sake, stand up and, as you say, give him the finger. Or take responsibility for your action. But
yeah.
This middle ground that Republicans play, I'll tell you, I don't know if I can make it through another day.
AJ, I hear you.
Thanks for your good work, Mike.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Take care, AJ. All right.
Bye.
See you. Uh-oh, I made a big boo-boo. It's not 2 years and 4 months left for Bush's reign in office. It's 1 year and 4 months. Oh, man. That would be, well, that's what he's constituted to remain in office. We'll see what happens. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. The hour. A couple emails during the break. This is from Wayne. Subject line is Commander-in-Chief. Hey, Mike, is it my faulty memory or does this twerp George Bush refer to himself as Commander-in-Chief more than any president in history? I go back to Eisenhower and I don't recall any president ever sticking his chest out and ranting how he's the Commander-in-Chief. I think you're right, Wayne. I guess my consciousness about presidents goes back to Eisenhower, too. And no, I don't remember ever hearing anybody use it, any president use it, in any context. I've heard people use it about these presidents. But Bush is a coward. He's a dress-up freak. Don't forget when he landed on the aircraft carrier a couple of years ago and declared war is over, the combat operations in Iraq have ended. The U.S. and its allies have prevailed, or whatever the hell the statement was. What was that, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, five, seven, ten? It seems like a lifetime ago. He likes to play dress-up. He likes to pretend like he is an experienced combat person. He likes to play like he's a soldier, a sailor, a Marine, an Air Force officer. This is what George does. William from Hollywood writes, and subject line, I have to really wonder, if the surge is going so very well and the troops are said to be working so well training the Iraqi police and soldiers, then where were these Iraqis in the crowd cheering and shaking hands with a very great American president who claims he's spreading freedom, bringing democracy to their war-torn land? Yeah, you ever notice that? You never, ever, ever, in any of Bush's trips to Iraq, it's always late at night when he arrives. It's always no announcement. None of the people, the great liberator, the great decider, the commander-in-chief, doesn't dare show his face in Baghdad. Somebody will do something if he does. And then Jack writes, according to Dave Lindorf's latest article, because the U.S. military could not guarantee this coward Bush's safety in Baghdad in the Green Zone, he had to go to a remote outpost where he was safe. That's why I went to Anbar, so Bush didn't even go to Baghdad. Bush is such a craven coward, Jack writes, it's just too bad that one of those brave soldiers he used as a prop would have just given this tin horn cowboy a piece of his mind, or even fist. Yeah, it's awful. It's just awful. I watched him, as I mentioned, yesterday, and he would approach these little groups of soldiers standing there trying to figure out, you know, what the hell is going on, and he approaches them, sticks his hand out while they're just standing there, and then he turns around, and that crap-eating grin of his, where you see that grin whenever he does the photo op in the White House, where some visiting president or prime minister or dictator or puppet comes to lick George's boots, or in some instances to tell George to go to hell. When they have the photo op part where George reaches over and shakes hands, and then he turns and faces a camera with that lick-spittle grin of his that just, I don't know, it just makes me want to scream and run into the woods. But he puts the same grin on when he has his picture with those who are about to die. It's horrifying. It's not only is it detached from reality, but what's the point? And did you know this? I kind of had a hint about this. Liz sent this to me. Or no, Rafi sent it to me from Glendale, California. While the nation's at war, Bush set to break the record for the most vacation president in history. This comes from a Liz Cataneo, American Rights at Work. But Rafi sent it in. Bush likes to talk about staying on course. Right now he's on course to become the most vacationed president in history. In the past 7 years he's been president, he's spent a whopping 418 days on vacation at his ranch in Crawford, Texas. 400, oh my God, that doesn't even count Camp David, I guess. In the meantime, his administration presided over an unprecedented rollback of workers' rights. Bush is busy outsourcing the federal government, letting his cronies bust federal employees' unions. The most vacationed president in U.S. history. Well, what are you going to do when you get out of here, Mr. Bush? I'm going to make some money. I'm going to give speeches like my dad. My dad gets 50, 60 grand a pop. You know what I'm saying? And Clinton's making money, too. I want to make some money.
I guess Tony Snow gave him that idea.
Somebody did.
I quit and make money.
I think your microphone is shorting out again, Kathy. Sorry, didn't hear that end part. I got to toss this in. It's kind of out of the queue here, but the Bush crime family, according to a court order, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, has said the Bush crime family can proceed with a plan to open U.S. border to long-haul Mexican trucks as early as this week. An appeals court rejected an effort by labor, consumer, and environmental interests to block this idea. The Ninth Circuit, late on last Friday, denied an emergency petition sought by the Teamsters Union, the Sierra Club, and the consumer group Public Citizen to halt the start of a one-year pilot program that was approved by Congress after years of legal and political wrangling. The Transportation Department, of course, welcomed the court's decision and said in a statement that allowing more direct shipments from Mexico will benefit U.S. consumers. Oh, yes, absolutely. Jim Hoffa, president of the Teamsters, said in a statement after the court ruling, quote, this is the wrong decision for working men and women. We believe this program clearly breaks the law, end quote. The emergency stay by the Teamsters, the Sierra Club, and Public Citizen was sought on grounds that the Bush administration's pilot program had not satisfied the U.S. Congress's requirements on safety and other issues. But the appeals court said, oh, sit down and shut up. We're going to let him do it anyway. Now, this is supposed to start September 6th. What is that, Thursday? U.S. Transportation Department officials hope to receive final clearance from the department's Inspector General's office, which is reviewing the safety acts, aspects. Yeah, okay. Mexican trucks operating in the U.S. have for years been restricted to U.S. points near certain large border crossings where the goods are transferred to trucks owned by U.S. firms. No more of that crap. No! Hell no! Truckers! What the hell makes them think they should work? Bush is thinking. Huh? Screw the truckers! Nah, I'm not in it for truckers. Truckers go to hell. Under the pilot program, Mexican long-haul trucking companies that have, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, met safety licensing and other U.S. requirements will be allowed to operate their rigs throughout the country. You see, this will reduce costs and speed up shipments. Sure will. Now, how long do you think it's going to take? Huh? How long is it going to take before a huge 18, 24, whatever the hell it is, rig, big old truck, loaded with heavy cargo, and the brakes fail, or the driver can't understand English on a highway sign. This is, by the way, this is what brought down the governor of Illinois. What was his name, Kathy? The Republican governor of Illinois, who did a couple of good things. He put a moratorium on the death penalty, but George Ryan, when he was Secretary of State, his office sold these commercial driver's licenses to anybody who would kick into the Ryan for Governor campaign. He was eventually found out, but he was found out as a result of a lawsuit. One of the, I think it was a Spanish-speaking truck driver who got one of these licenses and couldn't read English and missed a turn or did something, and the result was four or five, six people in the same family were burned alive in this collision. And the result was George Ryan is going to prison. It took a long time. It took him about 8 years to nail the son of a bitch, but they finally got him. So how long do you think it's going to be before something like that happens here? You see? And then what? Then what'll happen? Now, full disclosure here, trucks from Canada have no operating restrictions in the United States. I guess that's supposed to prove that we're racist bastards, but on the other hand, maybe it proves that we don't have any doubt that Canadians can read English.
It is wrong for the Congress to discriminate against Mexican trucks.
Oh, God. It's wrong for the Congress to discriminate against Mexican trucks. I've got a star on my car and one on my chest. 21 past the hour. Let's do a couple phone calls here real quick before the next break. Jim is calling from Mobile, Alabama, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jim.
Hey, good morning. Afternoon, Mike. Good evening.
Pick one.
Hey, I'm an over-the-road truck driver. My wife works for a large law firm in Mobile, Alabama.
Uh-huh.
About a year ago, there was a Mexican truck driver had a load of Tropicana orange juice coming out of Bradenton, Florida, heading to a warehouse in Dallas, Texas. Well, in Alabama, he pulled out in front of a tanker truck. He was parked on the side of the road. Well, the tanker truck ran into the back of his trailer, killed those two drivers. The next day, he goes to the wrecking yard, pays the towing bill on his tractor, and takes off and goes back to Mexico. And as of yet, they haven't been able to locate him.
Wow.
And also, these trucks that these big national fleets and everything, when they trucks get wore out and everything, they sell them to these people in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the trucks that won't meet the EPA standards and worn out equipment are the trucks that's going to come back across the border into the United States.
Yeah, well, I think that's why these three groups, environmental group, consumer group, and the Teamsters Union, which is, when you think about it, is kind of a strange coalition, but they, all three of them, asked the court to deny this permission because of exactly what you're talking about. Trucks that are mechanically unsound, trucks that don't meet emission standards as weak as they are in this country, and the fact that a lot of these drivers, and I know a lot of people are going to write to me now and say, you're being a racist pig, and frankly, I don't give a damn, but a lot of these, because I'm not, because a lot of these drivers can't read English. And if they're going to be on the highway, how in the, I've seen this happen. I saw this happen when I lived in Illinois. So I know that this sort of thing can happen and people die. So I don't get this, a court in San Francisco saying, no, go ahead, Bush, give the permission. I don't get that.
It's just a wholesale deal of getting rid of our jobs. It's really going to affect, you know, not only the lives of people on the road, is a safety factor, but as far as economics, I mean, it is going to just destroy the trucking industry.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of, and I'll tell you something else, and you don't need to comment on this, but I've known an awful lot of people over the course of my life or over the road truckers, and I'm not trying to categorize everybody this way who drives a truck, but generally speaking, these are folks who are independent. These are folks who are busting their ass for a living. These are people who are not afraid of hard work. They're gone from their families for long periods of time. And there's going to be some of these folks, Jim, who are going to get so pissed off and angry and, well, let me take one step further, enraged. I would not be surprised to pick up my morning paper or turn on television and see acts of violence perpetrated against folks that the truckers don't feel have a right to be here. I can remember when that sort of thing happened with steel workers and coal miners, and I don't see any reason why some truckers are not going to look at this and say, you know, I've had enough. This is the straw that breaks the camel's back. It's hard enough out here. And now this. So I don't know, Jim. Listen, I'm glad you called in. Take care, all right?
Have a good evening.
All right, sir. Take care. We'll talk again. Charles is calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on Sirius. Hey, Charles.
Oh, don't lose it on me now.
No, no, you're there.
No.
What?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the radio there, Charles. Talk to me.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, there we are. I've called you before. I'm a recovering school teacher.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm doing right now is teaching someone how to drive a truck.
Oh yeah?
Oh yes. And I've been down on the border there and I've seen some of those trucks that are coming across, and I guarantee you there is an accident waiting to happen.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's no question. You know, this kind of predatory capitalism doesn't give a damn about safety or health standards or whether or not someone is capable of handling one of those big rigs. They don't care.
Oh, no, they don't. And, of course, the reason why the Canadians can go all over the place is because they have an even stricter truck standards for their vehicles that exceed even ours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that has nothing to do with racism. It has to do with the fact that their laws are even stricter than ours.
Well, I foresee trouble. Did we lose him? All right, we lost him. All right. Lauren writes, subject line, no, we can't all read English, in reference to Canadian truck drivers. Hi, Mike. There are many in Canada who speak only French or speak as much English as I do French, which is almost none. I hope our truckers have to pass a test to be able to read road signs. A lot of road signs are symbols anyway, which should be understood no matter the country of origin. Well, yeah, okay, that's true. I maybe something is leaking out of me in that statement that I should be ashamed of. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Hanging around the
like to travel. They try to travel and you want to settle down. I guess they can't rip up your silver shrine.
About 25 before the hour. Have you got, in that vast library of music you have in there, Kathy, do you have Jessica by the Allman Brothers? Could next time we go out for a break, would you play Jessica? Now, see, you play little Allman Brothers, and I just get all Southern Rocky on you. I know. Mike in St. Paul, regarding the truckers, writes, well, Mike, last time we tried to get truckers to work for a dollar a day, something amazing happened. I bet James Hoffa Jr. has a little bit of the old man in him. Wouldn't it be nice if we unionized the Mexican truckers? The Teamsters already tried to stop the Mexicans from driving in but failed. Teamsters don't take losing too well. Yeah, why not? Why not just unionize them? That'll never happen. And regarding Bush's statement about... right now I'm playing for October, November. That's what I'm doing. Get us in a position in Iraq where the presidential candidates will be comfortable about sustaining a presence to stay longer. I'm just playing. I'm playing with them. Ron in Briarwood writes in, this miserable bastard is playing. If the Democrats do not use this quote in every speech on the floor of the Senate and the House, and if every Democratic candidate in the race does not use this quote in every speech on the stump, then they do not deserve any respect or anybody's vote. Hang him with his own words. Impeach the bastard. Sorry for the rant, but this one really got to me. Yeah, well, I hear you. Don't apologize to me, Rod. Right now, I'm playing for October, November. That's what I'm doing. Get us in a position where the presidential candidates will be comfortable with about sustaining a presence and staying in Iraq longer. And Suzanne in L.A., she sent me something from a website, and it quotes Jim Inhofe in saying he was kind of excited by the attacks in Iraq on the airplane carrying himself, Senators Martinette Martinez and Richard Shelby, and the Democrat Congressman Bud Kramer. Yeah, remember that? When was that, last week? They were, three Republican senators and a Democratic member of the House were making their pilgrimage to the Holy Land of Baghdad, and they were fired on once they took off. And Inhofe now says he's kind of excited. He's got some Cheney in him. Suzanne writes, this guy's an absolute lunatic. Please help Democratic State Senator Andrew Rice unseat Inhofe in 2008. Andrew Rice. That's kind of excited. I felt something warm in my pants. I was so excited. Excited. Kind of excited. Well, Jim, why didn't you ask the pilot to land and just go find yourself the nearest Marine or Army patrol and ask them to suit you up and go get some of that excitement that you're talking about, you cowardly son of a bitch? I got excited, man. Missiles flying around. Woo! Hot doggies. We had a good pilot, though. Back to your phone calls. All right, who's next? Douglas is calling from Sacramento, California, listening to KSAC. Hey, Douglas.
Mike, it's good to hear from you again. Yeah, the word discrimination kind of stuck in my craw about the trucker business.
Yeah.
Because when you think about it, we discriminate in all kinds of ways, and we're supposed to. We discriminate against people who don't pay taxes, people who commit crimes.
Yeah.
I mean, is he going to reverse discriminate? Well, of course they did. Reverse discrimination on those too, but
yeah. So you think I'm not being a racist pig rat fink Republican neocon by saying I don't want Mexican trucks in this country unless they're driven by American truckers? You don't think I'm being a racist pig, huh?
Not today, no.
Okay. Well, that's
and cool. It was. I mean, what about the security issue? What about the ports they're going to have supplying these Mexican trucking companies?
America, the United States of America, is more unsecured now than it was prior to September 11th. This whole thing about security, and I know you know this, Doug, this is a scam. This is something to keep Americans afraid. It's an issue to give to Chertoff to play with. Bush plays with Iraq. Chertoff plays with security. There's no such thing as security in this country. How in the hell could there be? How many of those shipping cartons come in, containers come into our ports all along the East Coast, West Coast, and Southern Coast every single day? How many? Have any idea? I don't.
No.
I bet it's tens of thousands of them, though.
And, of course, none of them have any drugs or illegals or...
Or dirty
God
bombs.
Forbid, yes.
Or some sort of biological weapon that as soon as the shipping container is opened, all these little beasties come screaming out, invisible, across, of course, then we all die. There's no security in this country. That's a joke.
Listen, Ian said I shouldn't sing, but I want to leave you with a song title. It's You've Gotta Go by Homer and Jethro.
You Gotta Go, Homer and Jethro.
I think the thought of that playing while Bush hands over the keys just struck me. It just tickles me. Look it up. I think you'll like it.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good night.
Thanks, Douglas. Appreciate it. Take care. Carlos is calling from Indiana, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Carlos.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, good, good, brother. Listen, my opinion, the thing about this truck coming from Mexico, it's not a Mexican trucker that comes. Years ago, I used to take apple from British Columbia, Canada, down to the Mexican border, and I would transfer to the Mexican truck, and then they would take it down to Mexico City. So I had the chance to talk to the Mexican driver.
Right.
And they make pretty good money. They leave Mexico City, they drive to the border, and then they do the business, and they go back. And what if those owner operators or the Mexican owner of the truck or whatever, they have to put like a lot of money in those rigs in order to bring it back into the United States. So they don't want to come in. What is happening right now is this American company trying to race to the bottom line. I mean, the barrel of oil is not dropping below $70.
Yeah, I hear you.
So the next thing to go is the driver pay.
Sure.
Why do we pay an American driver 40 cents a mile or 36 cents a mile when they know we can get a Mexican driver for 22 or 25.
There you go.
And, you know, and right now, because this is the time, the warehouse, and everybody make the order for the holiday season. This is the busiest season for the trucking business right now. And it's just a race to the bottom, like, you know, the way dirty capitalism always does. And that's what's happening.
Yeah, that's true. And for some reason, Carlos, I hadn't thought about that. But you're absolutely right. We talked about this last week. The capitalism always looks for the lowest possible cost of labor. They prefer slavery if they can get it.
Exactly.
You know,
but
that's.
They know in the busy season when things, because I mean, yes, it's a slow economy. It's very slow economy right now.
Right.
And if they know, they can, you know, say, well, I got to make some money somewhere.
Right.
And I will get an American driver for less than 30. Company driver, I'm talking about, for
right.
less than 36 cents or for less than, I don't know, 40 cents a mile. So I want the Mexican because I know I can pay them like 20 cents, 50 cents for God's sake. And they're still going to come in. You know, they're still going to make my money. And then the price of fuel is not going down.
Right.
So that's where they're going to find the money. That's where they cut the driver pay, and that's it. That's the end of the story.
There's
and the next thing they're going to go, Mike, is the rate Because if I'm out in California and somebody's paying like $3,500 for a load of produce going to Miami, they know they got a company out there. They got a whole bunch of Mexican drivers, and they know they're going to pay them like 15 cents or 22 cents a mile. That person will take that load from California to Miami, whatever, unless they will take it for $2,200 or $2,000.
Sure.
They will take it. Because they know they're saving on the driver's rate. And that was the problem. That's the next thing that's going to go. And that's going to take up for the owner-operator. I mean, no owner-operator in the United States or in Canada, for that matter, they're going to operate their rig with less than $1 per mile. Because it's just not, you can't make a living like that.
Yeah, it's going to be weird, Carlos. And I don't look forward to see how truckers are going to respond to this. Carlos, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you calling. I hope you check in again. Who's next here? We got a break coming, don't we? Yeah, there it is right there. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Groups tonight, aren't we, huh? It's about 9 before the hour. This is from Paul regarding Mexican drivers. Mike, are these Mexican drivers going to pay U.S. taxes, Social Security, income tax, etc.? No. Therefore, the companies who hire them can afford to pay less. Will they lower their delivery rates to us? No. Win-win for the fascist corporations. Yeah, I like those. I'm sure you've seen the commercials before. I don't care what the business is. And they say, we pass the savings on to you. You're right. Do you know, in all my years of being a spender of money, I have never felt that any savings was passed on to me by anybody? This is from Jack in San Diego. Mike, no matter how stupid you think conservatives are, you get two or more of them in a group, and it's like a singularity of stupid from which no actual competence can escape. Jack must be an astrophysicist. And then he says, I heard today that the Ninth Circuit ruling was only because NAFTA required it. That's interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. I couldn't understand why the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco, which has this reputation of being a rather liberal federal court, would rule against the environmental organization, Public Citizen, and the Teamsters, unless they had no choice because of NAFTA. And this is from Prairie 2. Mike, the reason for the big rush to bring Mexican trucks is because China is building the biggest container port in Norte America, and guess where? Mexico? No longshoremen's unions there. This also is what the NAFTA highway scheme is about. They want to set up duty-free zones in the central United States that would also be union-free zones. Well, the entire United States is just about a union-free zone at this point. How many Americans, working Americans? I am a member of a union. Of course, I happen to be the member of the worst union in the history of the union movement, which is AFTRA, but I'm still a union member and I still pay my dues. But how many American workers are members of unions at this point? 8% of the workforce, is that what it is? I think at its peak, we were under 40%. It was something like 38-39%, and that was when in the 40s, post World War II, I think. I don't know. I'm sure one of you crack researchers out there will send me an answer before the next break is over. Excuse me. Back to your phone calls. Marcia is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Marcia. Hi.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
I thought I could change the topic back to the resident of the White House's great speech-making prowess.
Sure, go ahead.
If that's okay. Well, you know, I think he better think of a different job for when he leaves the White House. I'm not quite sure he could make some money making speeches because we all know how good he is at that.
Mm-hmm.
But, in fact, I can compare him to, I went to see the Mr. Bean movie this weekend.
Yeah, I'd love to go see that.
It was actually quite hilarious.
That's what I've heard. That guy cracks me up.
Yeah, he's really funny, but that's who Bush reminds me of when he speaks. And I don't know if you remember how Mr. Bean speaks, but it's something like, oh, I can't do that. And
well, yeah, I loved that actor's role in the movie Love Actually. He was in that too, and he played the part of the salesman, the jewelry salesman at the during the Christmas shopping thing. Yeah, I don't know his name, drawing a blank, but
Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah, he was also the priest in Four Weddings and a Funeral. He's just funny as hell.
Oh, that's right. Well, there's a comparison for you, but you know, I also wanted to mention that I just can't believe that people take this person seriously, or he's barely a person, but that people take him seriously.
Bush, yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
And he's such a joke. And, of course, he's not a joke now, considering that he's killed hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, if not millions. When you figure everything in, denying federal funds for stem cell research, denying the use of condoms in countries that desperately need them in order to fight against the AIDS epidemic or HIV. It's just sickening what this guy has done. Oh, well.
It is sickening, and how people can respect him and vote for him. And I even have friends who voted for him, and when they tell me that they did, I'm like going into my quick reconsideration mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And
I know what you mean.
They take them seriously. But anyway, thanks a lot, Mike, and thanks for being you and being on the air all the time.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Marcia. It's very kind of you to say that. Thanks a lot. Take care. We'll talk again. We've got a couple more people here who want to talk about the Mexican trucker issue, and we'll get you on the way back here. I would imagine some of you truck drivers. Harley is calling from Ohio. Rick is calling from Clear Lake, Iowa. And John is calling from Baltimore. And all three of these guys are listening on Sirius satellite radio. So I would imagine that you're over-the-road truckers. And we'll talk when we come back. All right. Quick break here. This is NOVAM Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
drunk in a midnight choir. I have tried in my way to be free. Like a fish on a hook, like a knife from an old-fashioned book. I have saved all my ribbons for thee.
It's about 7 past the hour. So Jerry Lewis used the F word on his telethon, the muscular dystrophy telethon, why is that hard to say, is still in operation after all these years. Here in Atlanta, they play it on a station that I think has an Arbitron rating. Remember when back in the day when it used to be really a big deal, the Labor Day telethon for muscular dystrophy and all the negativity it generated? The argument being from a lot of activists that Jerry was objectifying these kids, and I can't take a position on that. But apparently, yesterday during the telethon, he was joking with his cameraman, and he said, "Oh, I see your family's here." No, I got these names wrong. There's Bruce, the smart one. There's Ralph, the illiterate fag, and then immediately stopped himself. And I think there's a very clear lesson there, how we have internalized and then he goes on to make a big elaborate statement today that anyone who knows him would know, you know, the usual stuff we hear all the time. It's just like when white people use the N-word or use the F-word or use I can go down the list if you want me to, but these slurs, these racial or religious or ethnic slurs, just slide out so easily, don't they? If you're of a certain age, I don't think younger people in this country find those words to be as electric as those of us who are older do. Still, always to our grave, we will. Those words carry an awful lot of power, negative power against. You know, the person who happens to be gay or the person who is of a different race or the person, blah, 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 blah. You know what we do. But the thing about, Jerry Lewis, who I have to admit I really have never cared for him. When I was a kid and used to go to see the Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis movies, he just used to make me just nervous. I'd be hopping around like a drop of water on a hot griddle for days after watching this freak. And as years went by, I just thought Jerry Lewis is one of the most egocentric, caught-up-in-himself Hollywood types I had ever in my life seen on the screen or read about. Just absolute fake. Oh, well, that's beside the point, and I digress. But internalizing and certain words, and they just slip out. You know, and when somebody uses that word, whatever that word is, the N-word, the F-word, the K-word, the S-word, the D-word, the middle, and then to turn around and say, well, no, I'm not that way, and you want to scream at him, what the hell are you talking about? The mere fact that you use the word. We're not saying you don't have gay friends, Jerry. We're not saying that you go out of your way to be tolerant of gay people, but there's a part of you that has internalized the word fag that you use at your convenience to slam someone. Come on, get real. Jesus, are people this stupid? Or when they open their mouth and the slur comes out, regardless what the slur is, do they all of a sudden get caught inside their own head? Oops. Did I really mean that? Yeah, I guess I did. Ooh, where'd that come from? Don't you get tired of it? But I digress. Back to your phone calls. As promised, Harley is calling from Ohio, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Harley.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
No, I'm fine. I wanted to thank you, first of all, for, you know, if you'd have went to the evil side, you'd be a millionaire now.
Well, that's, isn't that the truth?
Yes, sir. You would. With your passion, it would be true. Second thing, I'm a second-generation truck driver.
Uh-huh.
Whether I wanted to be or not, that's what happened.
I hear you.
But these Mexicans and also, and I'm sorry, but the Canadians, they're flooding our market. I'm an independent, I own my own company, truck, trailer. They're just flooding our market. And the rates are going down and the fuel's going up.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to be a pretty sight the time it's all through.
How do you think truckers are going to survive? Now let me add to that. They said the same thing about steel workers and coal miners, and definitely the steel industry has gone somewhere else. There are still some small steel makers in this country, but a truck driver, like you just said, a lot of people own their own equipment, their own rig, their own truck, whatever. They negotiate their own deals. And, you know, sometimes you have to take what's there, but sometimes, depending on the shipper, it's my understanding, you can get a little bit better deal. What's going to happen to the American truck driver, the over-the-road truck driver?
Well, Mike, the bottom line is the bottom line. I've seen them transport trucks to Mexico, down towards Mexico. Trucks we drove 20, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had to buy a new truck this year, and it cost me $135,000.
Yeah.
I'm fixing to have to buy a new trailer. Fuel that I put in my tanks is 60 cents a mile. When they have to buy a truck, it's $5,000. Mm-hmm. They're under a whole different, you know, I have to pay tax on this, tax on that.
Right.
And they're under a whole different, you know, world. They're mm-hmm. the Canadians and the Mexicans both. The Canadians have their insurance, Mexicans have their insurance. It's not a fair playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, you know, every time a Republican comes in office, I was a Teamster for 16 years, and I kept getting laid off until the point that it was like, you're out of here. I mean, I either had to go somewhere else, and that's when I started my own company.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not going to be a good thing. I mean, we're going to go down. I mean, we're either going to have to come down to their rates or we'll be completely out. And I don't know how anybody else can work for that.
Yeah. I hear you. All right. Harley, drive safe. Stay in touch, okay?
All right. Thank you, Mike, and thanks for everything you do.
All right, sir. Take care. Take care. You know, listen to Harley, and you know, in this instance, it's about truck drivers. But, you know, I wonder sometimes, I really do, how much of this constant pressure, downward pressure on wages, can the American worker handle? You know, the bankruptcy laws have been jiggered to favor the companies against whom an individual might file bankruptcy, unless it's a corporate bankruptcy. If it's a corporate bankruptcy, it's still a gravy train. But for individuals, the interest rates people are paying because they bought into the American dream about buying a house. You know, I hear a lot of stuff right now about, well, you know, folks shouldn't have taken the risk if they didn't think they could handle the mortgage payment. Which is hogsnot to me when the one thing that is held up as the main reason almost of being an American is to buy or at least make payments on your own house, and people go for it because of these lying sons of bitches in the mortgage industry like Countrywide and the rest of these people who have no problem being slick and pulling people in. And I think about all this stuff, and I just wonder how much more of this can the American worker take? When I was a kid growing up, usually a man, sometimes a woman, could go into a factory. I realized it was, you know, a lot of folks did not like working in a factory for 30 years. A lot of folks had no problem with it. But they could go in and make a living and do real well, thank you, and be part of a union. And I just wonder sometimes. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Strikes across the frontier and strikes for higher wage. Planet lurches to the right as ideologies engage. Suddenly it's repression, moratorium of rights. What did they think the politics of past?
are we gonna do what they say can't be done? Well, we've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch old Bandit run.
How can I help somebody whose lives have been adversely affected by the evil ones? And it's and behind me sits the answer. One beautiful truck.
And we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Westbound and down, 18-wheel rolling. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound just watching.
22 past the hour. Back to your phone calls here. Susan is calling from Oakland Park, Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
The last email you read kind of stole my thunder and my comment, but here's the next step after this experiment proves successful, which it will in Bush world.
Yeah.
China will start shipping its goods to Mexico ports there. Instead of on the U.S. West Coast, and how many workers are going to lose their jobs because of that?
Well, that was the email that I got. China is building the largest shipping container port, apparently in the Western Hemisphere, and it's going to be built in Mexico. So the truckers will be going there to pick up these wonderful products from China to bring to Walmart and various stores here in the United States. It's just too weird.
Well, you have a great night.
Okay, thanks, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I guess I'll just, there's something else here I wanted to add to the mix, but to hell with it. Let's go back to your phone calls. John is calling from Baltimore, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, John.
Hi. I want to talk about the Mexican trucks also. I'd like to bring up the safety issue. As a truck driver here, I have 30 years experience. I'm required to be retested every in Ohio. It's every 4 years. I have to go take a recertification test. I have to take a physical once a year. I'm required to keep a logbook as to the hours that I've driven for the past 8 days, and have it in my possession at all times. The real slap in the face came last year, when the federal government announced that we had to have a criminal background check because they were looking for foreign terrorists.
Right.
You know, so, I just wonder, are the Mexican truck drivers going to have to go through this?
I'm sure somebody is going to stand up there, John, and say, yes, they do. And somebody's going to stand up there and say, their trucks have been inspected and they meet U.S. safety standards. And somebody's going to say their trucks meet U.S. emission standards. And the thing is, on all three of those topics, it's going to be a filthy lie. This is what the Bush crime family does. No matter what the issue is, they will get somebody who'll stand out there and lie through their teeth. I mean, even if it's the attorney general, even if it's the vice president, even if it's the Colin Powell my God. So as far as the trucking industry is concerned, they no more are going to speak the truth about that than they've spoken the truth about anything. You know, just one sentence. Remember all those weapons of mass destruction that were in Iraq that we just had to go over there and shoot them up. Or else they'd be dropping nuclear bombs on the United States. So why should they tell the truth about truckers?
Well, one of the things the American people should ask themselves is quite basic. Right now, if I'm going through Baltimore, Maryland. If I have a small wreck or a large wreck, my driver's license is in a central computer. You know, if I get a ticket in Maryland, it shows up in Ohio.
Right.
Well, I can't just disappear. You know, my company's required to carry a certain amount of insurance. Mm-hmm. When one of these trucks hits somebody, and God forbid, hurt somebody to where you can't work anymore, who are you going to go after to make yourself whole?
Good question.
That's what I'm worried about.
Well, I'm sure they're going to have an answer for that, too, which would be another...
Well, I called my state, or my Ohio's Senator Voinovich, and he's going to get back to me.
Yeah.
That was a week ago.
Well, do me a favor, and when he does get back to you, John, let us know what he said.
Okay.
Because, you know, on some of these issues, Voinovich is not a complete jerk like a lot of these right-wing Republicans are. I don't know what he's going to tell you about this, but I hope you'll let us know, okay? All right, John, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. Drive safely. Another break. We'll be back. Stay with us. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio.
And why you don't like me, I can't understand. It's just a drugstore truck driving man. He's a
those who enter the country illegally violate the law.
Well, it's Monday morning. He's kissing mama goodbye. He's up and gone with the sun. Daddy drives an 18-wheeler, and he's off on a Midwest run. And three sad faces gather round mama.
They 25 before the hour. I'll tell you what, I know this is kind of weird, but, man, just let me kick back, listen to Dixie Chicks, Marshall Tucker, Allman Brothers in Alabama, and I'll be talking like that. I'll be saying like this, hey, hot damn it, what the hell is going on over there?
You left out Leonard Skinner.
No, I don't do Leonard Skinner. I'm sorry, I just don't do Leonard Skinner. But seriously, Alabama, Dixie Chicks, Marshall Tucker, and the Allman Brothers. And as we say, I'm just in hog heaven.
Seeger? No Seeger?
No, I'm talking about Southern. Oh, never mind. You're so innocent. Back to your phone calls. Phil is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Mike.
How you doing?
Oh, man. Just hanging in there like everybody else.
I hear you.
Talking about the trucker thing, Randy Rhodes mentioned she believes the whole end result of this is to dissolve the Longshoremen Union, to because of the what China's doing, going down to Mexico with their all the goods come down there, and then that just says kisses goodbye all of the longshoremen up here.
Well, you get rid of the Longshoremen's Union and you get rid of the Teamsters Union. What's left?
Yeah.
Seriously, what's left? Mm-hmm. What the hell is left?
Mm-hmm. Just peons. The other thing you mentioned about Larry Craig, not much, but I heard something really, I got kind of a different take because I believe that they wanted him out because apparently he didn't go along with the Patriot Act, and Shrub was heard to have said that G.D., said G.D. Traitor or G.D. Non-Patriot.
Really?
Is this deserter having the gall to call somebody a G.D. Unpatriot?
I hadn't heard about that. I figured that the Republicans fell on him like sharks on a chunk of meat. because the Republican Party is imploding. It's just going right down the sewer. So many of these people, and I'm not talking about their sex. I don't give a damn about their sex, but their thievery and theft and fraud and lies and corruption. The only way that the sex aspect plays into it is because they're such filthy hypocrites. So, you know, when they're anti-gay and get caught, you know, soliciting people for gay sex, or if they're anti-child pornography and get caught with tons of child pornography, or if they're constantly talking about hookers, no offense to sex workers, and they're caught with a hooker, then all of a sudden, oh, God, the Republican leadership falls on them like snakes, like the snakes they are, and just want them out of the party very quickly to kill the story. That's the only reason this freak Mitch McConnell and the rest of these people, just to kill the story. Get it out of our face. We got an election coming up, you know, that sort of thing. They don't give a damn about Larry Craig. They don't care about
Vitter.
No, they don't. Well, Vitter's okay because Vitter was just messing around with a hooker, and apparently it was a female hooker. So, you know, if it's a man on woman sex, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If it's anything other than that, and I'm not talking about child molestation. The Catholic Church has an exclusive franchise on that. But if it's gay sex or bisexuality or transgender issues. Oh, Lord have mercy. Here comes the hammer. I don't know. I just wish all these bastards would just go away. You know what I'm saying? If they would just go away.
Well, I can't wait till, you know, January 20th, 2009, because according to Dead Certain, you know, this should be called not Dead Certain, that, you know, the biography or whatever it is, and some guy wrote, listen to this creep for 6 hours and gets all these having to listen to that thing. You know, it's like said something about, oh, he's bored. He's just going to go be bored riding around. It's like we should send him a waterboard. He wants to be bored. And I have the perfect thing for him. He could be a train conductor. Instead of saying all aboard, he could go waterboard.
You're a strange man, Phil.
I am.
Yeah, you're very strange.
Happy evening, man.
All right, you too. Thanks. Take care. Take care. Have you got that Jerry Lewis thing? Oh, let's not play it. To hell with it. You know, we don't need to hear it. We don't need to hear it. Jake is calling from Arcata, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Mike. Speaking of strange men, is this true, Larry Craig, the right-wing Republican hypocrite from Idaho, has decided that he is going to change his mind and unresign from the Senate? Is that right?
I know there are all sorts of rumors flying around the internet and Newsweek magazine and CNN. You know, who knows? I'm kind of in the mood for some weird theater. So, you know, I would love to see Larry Craig come out and say, no, I'm really innocent of the charge, and then see if the judge in Minneapolis slaps him with contempt of court or perjury. I mean, when he pled guilty, he was under oath, wasn't he?
That's right.
So, I don't know how any of that works, and I'd like to see Mitch McConnell just wet his pants, because this guy, Bill Rogers, the one who's been who's a gay activist who's been outing these gay hypocrites, or hypocrites who happen to be gay, I guess I should put it that way, Rogers says he has a list of another 20 of them that unless somebody makes a declaration of faith, you know, and drop the hypocritical mode, he's going to start releasing more names. So I'm sure that Mitch McConnell is one of the names. McConnell is such a homophobe. He is such a hypocrite. He is such a religious right nutball. And as far as his wife is concerned, Elaine Chao, I think anyone who is aware of that marriage is aware that Elaine is nothing more than the beard for Mitch. That, you know, that's all she is. That's all she is. So as far as whatever Larry Craig does, I just hope it's loud. I hope the media surrounds it. I hope it's messy. I hope there's a lot of screaming and finger pointing and name calling. I want to see hypocrites burn. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got a feeling this is going to end up with Larry Craig in a white Bronco headed to Mexico, you know. Maybe Larry Craig, like O.J., can go out and find the real pervert.
The real pervert, yeah.
You know?
the real guy who sits in the toilet and waves his hand. And,
you know, Larry Craig, the guy is not only self-righteous, he's a complete moron. And how the people of Idaho can actually vote for Larry Craig, oh, God, they should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, well, his perversion, of course, is the fact that he's a hypocrite.
Well, that's the whole point. The point is he's out there saying that gays should be treated as second-class citizens, that they shouldn't be allowed to marry or join the military. But Larry Craig, however, can do whatever he wants because he's a U.S. senator and he has a card to prove it.
He's got a card to prove it. He does indeed. All right, Jake, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care,
thanks,
okay?
Mike.
All right, take care. Robin is calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hey, Robin.
Hi, Mike. Good evening, sir.
Good evening to you.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, sounds like you're doing a lot better. Yeah, you know what? I was sitting here and I was thinking to myself, I keep hearing all these things that, you know, this guy Bush is doing, and it seems like he's constantly trying to excite the people and get the American people upset and ticked off. And I just, you know, I don't trust him at all. I'm wondering if maybe he's not done this thing with the Mexican truckers coming into our country, because he'd like to see some reason where he could march out, say, National Guard or even, who knows, but in the future, United Nations troops, you know, on the American people. He's festering for a fight with the American people.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, it's just that, God, I can't even stop listening to the radio, because every day I hear something new, something more, something that keeps saying, we need to take our country back. This is ridiculous. Totally, totally.
Well, in order to take the country back, and I hear what you're saying, I think it's fairly clear now the way elections have been stolen since 2000, that it's going to take more than just lobbying for your favorite candidate. I don't know what it's going to take, but remember those four boxes that are available for the defense of liberty.
Yeah. Sure.
Soap, ballot, jury, and ammo. So I don't know. I don't know where we are in that in that sequence. I know where it feels like sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, it seems like, you know, when your back's against the wall, you've got to do the unthinkable, and that's what it almost seems like that's where the American people are being pushed.
I know. I hear you.
Hey, Mike, hey, thanks a lot for taking my call, sir, and God bless you and appreciate you on the air. Love hearing you every night, sir.
Thanks, Robin. Take care. We'll be back after the break. This is Nova M Radio.
6 days on the road and I'm going to make it home tonight.
Before the hour, thanks to our motley crew. Ian Huff engineered the program at KPHX in Phoenix, our flagship station. Billy Foster is our moderator in the chat room there. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay in Atlanta is our senior producer. Oh, by the way, for those of you who listen in Seattle on AM 1090, They're doing a thing. You got to go to their website and check this out. It's am1090seattle.com. am1090seattle.com. And they're asking for pledges, not for your money, but for your time to listen to your favorite radio station, Seattle's Progressive Talk. And this is kind of funny. Go check it out. AM1090Seattle.com. AM1090Seattle.com. I'm on their mailing list, obviously. And I got this today, and I thought, no. They can't be having a pledge drive. My God, that's a CBS-owned radio station. And then I read into it, and it's kind of cute. They're asking listeners to consider making a pledge of their time to listen to Seattle's Progressive Talk. I just think, all right, so maybe it's not funny. I think it's kind of funny. Check them out, even if you don't live there. That's a good stream too. If you ever have trouble getting the internet stream, go to AM1090Seattle.com. Back to your phone calls. Dennis is calling from Kansas City, also listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Dennis.
Yeah, hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. You're on the radio.
Yeah. I wanted to chime in on the trucker issue.
Uh-huh.
And I've been out here 30 years, and I will not give up without a fight. And I know there's other truckers like me. I'm an owner-operator.
Yeah.
And we will not go down without a fight. These Mexican truckers are going to find a lot of trouble when they come up here. And Bush and Cheney are going to find a whole lot of trouble with the whole situation.
It's pretty grim. I mean, it's harder and harder and harder to for the base of labor in this country that has been there for the past 60, 70, 80 years to continue to make a living. I work in radio, but I'll tell you what, there have been many times when I've been unemployed and had to rely on unemployment comp and so on and so forth, compensation, so on and so forth. But, you know, when you take a look at the manufacturing base, the transportation base in this country and what has happened, it's just astonishing. I don't know how much more we can take in this country before something really rips. I mean, seriously, every time I pick up the paper now, it's about homeowners with these terrible phony mortgages. It's about people who are maxed out on their credit cards. And I don't know. I just wonder. Like I said, I wonder how much more we can take, Dennis.
Well, I don't think we can take any more. I think Bush and Cheney are looking for a revolution. Okay? It's going to happen. It's going to start, and I think the American people are waiting for something to kick it off. And this is going to start it. It definitely will. Because the Mexicans will not survive up here. I have had Mexican push down my throat for the last 7 years, and I am tired of it. I'm not going to learn their language. They're supposed to learn mine if they want to be up here.
Yeah.
And I have to deal with them daily. And that's all I have to say, and I will take the rest of yours off air. Thank you.
All right, Dennis, thanks for checking in. Drive safely. Drive safely. You know, there's a way to do some of this stuff fairly, but you and I are not going to, we're not going to see it, because this is something that we've talked about on this program many, many times. I've got nothing against, well, I do, but I mean, I can live with a capitalistic system, so-called free enterprise, which it's not. As long as that system has enough checks and balances on it to protect people. You know, unbridled predatory capitalism is what Bush and Cheney have introduced. I mean, really have pushed onto working people in this country. And you can't survive. Unrestricted, unrestrained, unregulated capitalism will take the average working person and the average family and the average everything, and just devour it and utterly destroy it. because capitalism is about capital. It's not about people. And capitalism will always, always, always do everything in its power. And I know I'm making it sound like some kind of a monster, but it is. Everything in its power to drive wages as far down as they can possibly be driven. And remember that the ideal situation for capitalism is slavery, where you don't have to pay anybody anything. You don't have to worry about safety and health and environment. You just, you know, you buy, go buy your 100 slaves and put them to work. And there's an awful lot of us white people in this country who do not understand that for 300 years, that's how wealth in this country, big wealth, was put together. It wasn't put together by hard work of white folks trying to, you know, better themselves. Hell, no, don't be a fool and believe it was. It was done because we had pure capitalism in this country. Slavery, no restrictions, and, you know, the top 1%. Oh, well, to hell with it. Too late for a lecture. I'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks a lot for being here. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.